Though 2011 was and always will be a memorable time for state politics in Wisconsin, we must bid it adieu and welcome in the state political season of 2012. Our state Senate and Assembly has already begun working legislation through the proper channels behind the scenes, but next week they'll go to the floor for the first time this new year. This hour we'll wade through some of those bills with two lawmakers from both houses of the state's legislative branch and both sides of the political aisle. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side Political Roundup. Thanks for tuning in this evening. I'd like to introduce my guests this hour. First, joining us from his office at the state capitol is Republican State Assemblyman and Assembly Majority Leader Scott Suter. Representative Suter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate being here.
And joining us from our studios in Madison is Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma. Senator Vinehout, thank you for taking the time.
Good to be here.
And as always, I want to invite you, the listener, to become part of this conversation. I mean, really, how often do you get the chance to talk directly to your elected leaders? You can do that tonight by simply dialing in at 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. Or for the bashful, you can post a question or comment on our West Side Facebook page. All you got to do, go on your Facebook like you do, like you love to. Look for The West Side in the search column. You'll find us. All right, and with that, to preface our look ahead to this year's state legislative season, I feel we should just take a look back briefly on 2011. We could probably fill multiple shows up with what happened last year, but Representative Suter, I'd like to start with you. What did state government do right in 2011, and what did it do wrong?
Well, we got to work very, very quickly. Some accused us of going too fast. Some accused us of working too hard, but we did, as you know, as everyone knows, we had a very aggressive special session on jobs right away out of the gate. We did a number of things, Department of Revenue reforms. We did trespasser liability and tort reform. We changed and totally revamped the Department of Commerce and to make it a public-private partnership. We made changes to the Ag Loan Program. We did a number of items that really set the stage for Wisconsin, for businesses to have some type of confidence and stability in terms of where we're going and what the business climate is going to look like, especially with regard to our tax structure. And we did things like a $4,000 tax deduction for small businesses for every job created. You know, we streamlined the rulemaking process, which is a huge obstacle for many small businesses. You know, we did things like the Rural Jobs Act and the Dairy and Livestock Investment Tax Credit. So the list was long. No one item was going to completely solve what we needed to do, but together they are creating an environment that sets the stage for us to not only create jobs, but create confidence in businesses in Wisconsin for them to stay here and businesses to move here. And, of course, we solved a $3.6 billion state deficit without raising taxes. So I would argue success. We did it, you know, we were working very, very hard in a special session I know some have accused us of going too fast, but we had to because our economy is an emergency status, and we needed to solve that budget deficit and move forward and do so quickly. That's what people had demanded. That's why they elected us.
So if you had, you know, 2020, hindsight is 2020, they say, if you could do anything over again, would you? Any differently, I should say?
You know, it's always, you always look back and go, yes, we could have, made a few tweaks here and there. We were faced with a pretty serious, difficult task, and there's nothing that would have changed that. You had a $3.6 billion deficit. There's so many of us that ran on, so we said, we're going to solve this. People said, yeah, you're going to push it down the road, you're going to use gimmicks, you're just not going to do it. And we did it, and they said, there's no way you're going to do this without raising taxes, and we did that as well. So it was tough, and yes, we made some cuts. There, we had to streamline state government. We had to make tough, serious reforms, and we did. Was it perfect? No. Was it popular? Not necessarily, but it was the right thing to do, and it's also what we said we were going to do from the outset when we got elected. And you know, people wanted us to get our economy back on track and get our fiscal house in order. That's what we did. And was it pretty? No. Was it fun? No. I would have traded jobs at some points with anyone. but the fact is, you know, that's what we were charged to do. That's what the people, at least the people that elected me and many of my colleagues, said you need to do, and that's what we did.
All right. Senator Vinholt, same question to you. What went right in state politics in 2011? What went wrong?
I would say what went right is the people got involved and people started paying attention to what was happening in Madison. And as far as what went wrong, I would say just about every bill the Republicans passed is wrong. I can't begin to give you the list of things that are worse off right now in this state than it was, than we were a year ago. But I can say, just to stick with one thing, which seems to be the strength of where Representative Souter is that we've balanced the budget. The end of this year, we saw the comprehensive annual financial report come out from the state of Wisconsin. And what we saw is that although we are all, and every governor ever since the state began, are required to have a statutorily balanced budget, what we see is a growing gap between what's actually budget balanced on a cash basis and what's balanced on what we use, what accountants call generally accepted accounting principles. That gap has been steadily raising. And I'm not blaming one side or the other because it's risen under both Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. But that gap is actually worse this year than it was last year. So to say, and it's a bit like saying, well, I balanced my checkbook, but I'm not looking at the Visa bill that just came in the mail that has all of my Christmas spending on it. We're not being honest with the people when we say that the state's in better shape. It's not. It's in worse shape, and it's going to be in worse shape at the end of this budget year. We've got to somehow figure out how we're going to help schools, how we're going to deal with 65,000 people that are going to lose their health insurance and perhaps as soon as April. We've got to figure out how we move forward in this state. And when we look at what happened in this budget, the Republicans say that they had a $3.5 billion deficit. What they don't say is they had $2 billion in new money, and the Democrats in 2009 balanced the budget without all of the hurt that happened in this last year, that was a deficit or a mismatch between revenue and expenses of 6.6, twice as much, Rich.
The Representative Souter, a response.
Well, in response, I mean, the last budget, while the budget passed, and yes, there was a $6 billion deficit, but how it was solved by the other party was to utilize stimulus money, one-time stimulus money, millions and millions of dollars that came from the federal government, which I'm not sure, frankly, helped at all. But they did use it to fill part of that budget deficit, and then they raised taxes by upwards of $5 billion. We had neither. We had a $3.6 billion deficit. We didn't have stimulus money. In fact, we had to make up for the stimulus money that was spent and utilized because we didn't have – it was one-time money. So we not only had to make up for that, we had to fill in the gaps. We had other problems as well. We had tuition. We had tuition reciprocity we had to solve. We had the we had to make absolutely certain we paid back what we owed in terms of the patient's compensation fund. Though that hundreds of millions of dollars we had to pay back, so we had to add that to the mix as well. And it was a mammoth task without raising taxes. And to say that everything we did was wrong, well, a lot of these bills came through on bipartisan votes. So I'm not sure, you know, I have great respect for the senator. I really do. I like her. But I think we have a very serious disagreement when it comes to how we balance state budgets. Many would do that through tax increases. We did it through balancing the books. And our structural deficit, we reduced that by upwards of 90%. That has not happened in upwards of 20 to 25 years. And that's important. So we not only reduced the structural deficit, we solved the deficit without raising taxes, given the amount of money we had to spend because we were placed in debt by previous budgets, and that's a mammoth task.
I'm sure that we could go back and forth on that all night, but I'd briefly like to talk about bipartisanship in state government. Last year it seemed to be lacking, to say the least, or to put it mildly. Senator Vinholt, is there any hope for more cooperation between your side, the Democrats, and Representative Studer's side, the Republicans, this year?
When you're in the majority, you really have an opportunity to lead, and it is incumbent on the party in the majority to bring the minority in. I can go to my Republican colleagues, and I frequently do, and say, would you please take my bill that I introduced out of your drawer and have a public hearing on it? But the majority controls the process. They control the bills that have hearings. They control the bills that go to the floor. They control the bills that become law. And when I look at where we are right now, I can't think of a single Democratic bill right now that's moving forward. Very, very few Democratic bills have had hearings. I haven't had a single bill that, of all the bills I've introduced, that has even had a hearing, let alone passed. And I talk with my Republican colleagues, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of hope that that's going to happen. That said, I think that there is a lot that we can work on. Representative Souter's right. There were some bipartisan bills that passed. But the major issues that you heard about, the major issues of disagreement that we have in this state, were issues where we had one party that went to the hard right and did not want to sit down and talk with the other side. There are places where we can find some understanding. I just had a conversation this afternoon with Senator Moulton about sand mines, and I think that we can come to some agreement on how we move forward on, for example, public disclosure, knowing whether or not you're going to have a hearing in your area about a sand mine in your neighborhood. I think that's common sense legislation that both sides should support. So, yeah, I think we can have bipartisanship, but there has to be a coming together from both sides. And for me to go to my Republican colleagues and say, hey, I want to work together, they've got to then say, Kathleen, you're right. I will work together. I'll make sure your bill gets a hearing.
Representatives, I'm sorry. You can finish your thought if you like.
Well, I was just going to say it means coming together on both sides, and you have a special responsibility when you're in the majority. When I was in the majority, I didn't have any problem having hearings on Republican bills. I passed a number of Republican bills out of the committees that I chaired. We had a lot of bipartisan votes. In fact, in the Ag Committee, I can't remember any time when we didn't have a bipartisan vote. So, you know, there are different styles of leadership, and right now a lot of the Republicans in charge have chosen to have that extreme partisan leadership style, and I think that's bad for the state.
Representative Souter, how do you see cooperation and bipartisanship going forward this year in state politics and looking back, I guess, last year?
Well, you know, I think Senator Vinehout is talking about the state Senate and you know, they're their own entity. However, in the state assembly, we have had a number of initiatives, and we have passed Democratic bills over here. We have worked together. Now, does everyone work together? Maybe not. But, you know, we have had a tough year. We've had major disagreements. There's no question about that. But I think going forward into 2012, people are beginning to talk about major issues. We're talking about, I think, issues that we can come to agreement on. Take, for instance, a bill I have with Representative Rivard on allowing the DNR to properly manage the wolf population. I think we're going to get great bipartisan support on that because that's an issue that, you know, it's not a Republican or Democrat mm-hmm. issue. It's something we need to do.
There definitely are givens, but besides mm-hmm. that.
Sure. Besides that, yes, I think we are going to work together on a number of issues. You know, we'll see. You know, the mining bill, I think in the end we're going to have some bipartisan support on that. DNR regulatory reform, I'm positive we're going to have some bipartisan support on that. And you know, if you're looking at adoption, that's an issue we have bipartisan support on. Foster care reform, there's a number of issues that we're working together on and that we're going to have bipartisan support on. So I think 2012 is, there's hope, and I think there's a lot of people that are talking. And while 2011 was tough, there's no doubt about that, I have a lot of hope and a lot of faith that 2012 is going to bring a measure of bipartisan cooperation. And I like that. I think that's good. You know, Democrats come into my office and we talk. Do we agree all the time? No, we don't. But, you know, we're talking, and it's not as if, you know, you can have your disagreements, but I think we're getting back to, you know, one of those situations where you can have your disagreements and they can be respectful and you can try to forge, you know, compromises. you know, I myself, you know, Mark Pocan, who's a Madison liberal, I tease him all the time. We work together on a number of issues, including corrections. And he's running for Congress, but we work together. And that type of cooperation is important, even though we're in charge right now. You still have cooperation because everyone that gets elected, they represent people, they have good ideas, and I think it's important that you're able to at least talk. And if you end up disagreeing, fine, but we are talking, and that's important.
And with that, we're going to take our first break here in our West Side Political Roundup for 2012. There's plenty more where that came from. We're going to be right back. We're going to dig into the iron mining bill that is sure to draw a lot of attention, a lot of conversation. We'll talk about that right after these messages. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side Political Roundup, the first one of 2012. We're talking politics, legislation, and everything in between with our guests, Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma and Republican State Assemblyman Scott Souter of Abbotsford. If you'd like to jump in on this conversation, please do. Give us a call at 800-228-5615. That number, again, is 1-800-228-5615. Or, if you're bashful, you can post your question or comment on our Facebook page. Just search for The West Side. And with that, we're going to get into this iron mining legislation. It's turning a lot of heads right now. I'm talking about Assembly Bill 426, which pertains to the permitting process for iron mining. An iron mining company, Kogebik Taconite, hopes to construct a pretty large iron ore mine in the Pinoki Range in northern Wisconsin. That's located in Ashland and Iron Counties. Representative Souter, I'm seeing that this is like one of the top priorities for the Republicans this year, or right away. It's like it has to happen now. Why is it so important?
Well, we've been working for a long time on this. This is not just something that popped up. I mean, the mining issue has been around for at least a year,
right?
If not 2 years. But this is an issue that it is for us. We want to do this right, and we've taken a long time to make sure that we do it right. We've had three public hearings now, and we want an open, transparent process on this. But you're looking, it's all about jobs in terms of the mining bill. You're looking at about 3,000 plus construction jobs, and you're looking at about a $2 billion, even short-term economic impact for all of Wisconsin's economy. And then you're looking on top of that between about 3,000 and 6,000 long-term mining jobs that the average pay and benefits package will be for the workers. And in Ashland, in that general area, they are desperately crying for jobs. It's about $82,000 for the average pay and benefits package. So, you know, not only the billions in terms of economic impact, and that's annual, this mine could last upwards of 80 to 100 years. It is, I believe, in terms of the bill that we will be passing in the State Assembly and the State Senate, and it will be good for the environment, it won't compromise environmental integrity, and it will be a reasonable permitting process and timeline so that the company will actually come here and the jobs can actually be created. So this is very, very important for jobs, not just for that area, but for the entire state of Wisconsin.
And it is interesting, when I'm actually from Superior, which is right down the South Shore, or I guess towards the North Shore, but it's interesting when you go to Ashland or Bayfield, and in those areas, they seem more concerned about the environmental impacts that might happen because of this.
Mm-hmm.
But you go over to Hurley, or you farther that down that road, and they want jobs. They're just hungry for jobs. I want to ask Senator Vinehout, if do you think that this bill's going about getting this taconite facility up and operating in northern Wisconsin? Is it going about it the right way?
No, I don't think so. I would say that when Representative Souter says that it's been around for a long time, what he doesn't tell you is if you're not a Republican who happens to have connections to the mine that was writing the bill, you haven't seen the bill until just very recently. There was an awful lot of secretive work done on this bill. The original bill was pulled because it was completely written by the mine, according to people that have been close to it. So I think that it's good that we're up in the North Country and having the hearing, but it took Senator Jauch and Representative Brulee having their own listening session up there to sort of shame the Republicans into coming north.
I think
the people need to be a part of the process.
Well,
I've read through the existing mining law, and in our existing mining law, we have a very public process We have a process that's slow and deliberative, that involves the scientists in making the decision, that protects the groundwater, that does the studies. And when I look at what's happening now, the company is trying to rewrite the law. And I don't think that's the way the process should work.
But
the way it should work is that the people should be involved in the process, and the legislators should represent their people.
But the process is slow and deliberate. Well, if we need these jobs now, why should we wait for a process that could take maybe 5, maybe 7 years?
What good is a job if you've got arsenic in your water? We have to protect the groundwater. We have to keep lead and arsenic out of the water. We are talking about resources that once they're gone, they're gone. And if we're going to have a mine that's going to be here for 100 years, Lord Almighty, let's get it right before we pass this law.
Representative Souter, a response?
Well, first of all, there's been 3 public hearings on this, and the issue has been around for a long time. And to say that the mining company has been writing the bill is more than inaccurate. A lot of people have been involved. A lot of my colleagues have been involved. And yes, of course, you know, entities like the mining company give their input. But do they write the bill? No. The committee itself, it is a committee bill right now. The committee is going to rewrite the bill. There's going to be amendments, and that's why we're taking longer than some say we even should have to take a look at it and do 3 hearings. Most bills do not get 3 hearings, and this one has, and we're going to certainly make changes to the document, and that's part of the public hearing process. We're listening to the public, making changes accordingly that makes sense. But, you know, the DNR is still part of this process, so is the Corps of Engineers. We are not going to ruin the environment. And all these scare tactics that some out there are using to say, oh my gosh, you know, the water is going to be polluted and you know, everything's going to be destroyed, that is simply not the case. We are not talking about, you know, the Crandon mine. We're talking about iron ore. And how they get the ore out of the ground is through using magnets. This is not a process that involves, you know, chemicals being utilized to get the ore out.
Representative Souter, we'll come back to it. We've got to take a break for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with our second half of the West Side Political Roundup in about 5 minutes. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side. We're joined by 2 state lawmakers for our first political roundup of 2012. Joining us from the WPR studios in Madison is State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma. And from his office at the state capitol, we're joined by State Assemblyman Scott Souter, also the majority leader in the assembly, Republican from Abbotsford. The state legislature is already hot and heavy preparing and introducing legislation for this year, and next week they'll have their first floor period of the new year. If you've got any questions or comments for either of Senator Vinehout or Representative Souter, give us a call at 800-228-5615. Or you can post it on our Facebook page by searching for The West Side once you're on Facebook. We haven't got any yet, but I'm keeping an eye out for it. We spoke a bit about iron mining. I think we're going to have to move on real quick to the a big initiative by the governor that he's been touring the state promoting. I'm talking about the Wisconsin Working Plan. And basically what it does is it aims to increase job creation in the state, includes new efforts to get veterans and non-veterans trained and into the workforce quickly. Part of the plan calls for tech schools, private and public universities, and public K-12 schools to work together to come up with shorter and less expensive training degree programs. Senator Vinehout, what do you think of the governor's plan?
Well, I think there are some ideas that he has that are good. I think it's a good idea to bring everybody together and have them work in terms of finding that even way for students to go from the technical colleges, from, say, vocational education at the high school to technical colleges.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a problem, and that's that he's talking about what we need to do, but he hasn't made an investment in what we need to do.
What do you
if
mean?
You looked at the headlines this morning in the Minneapolis papers, you probably saw that Governor Dayton just introduced a big jobs package, and he's put more than $7 million into an investment in creating jobs. But what our governor has done is just the opposite. He has cut back the tech colleges that do the job training. He's cut back the K-12, the local schools, and in response, we've seen big cuts in vocational education programs. And we know right now there's a mismatch. A lot of business leaders have been talking about that mismatch between applicant skills and job requirements. So, for example, company in Black River Falls needs welders, but they're not making welders fast enough. And we've got an opportunity to teach welding at the high school. But what happens? We've cut back 15 teachers at the high school, and some of them are voc ed teachers. So they can't teach at the high school the welding that needs to happen. And then we've got a waiting list for the program at Western Wisconsin Tech Colleges because they've just seen a multi-million dollar cut. So we have a problem here in getting people skilled to be able to take those jobs. And that's really what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the governor make an investment in some of these things that he's saying he wants to do, but he hasn't put his money there.
Representative Souter, I actually spoke with the governor this week about this, and the same thing, that the fact that there have been these cuts, and he said, well, the savings from the collective bargaining reforms more than makes up for it, so there's no problem there. And what do you think overall of the governor's plan, and what about the cuts? How does that play into this whole plan to get people educated quick and get them into skilled jobs?
Well, you know, there certainly, I can't say there weren't cuts throughout state government, and there was some streamlining. But the fact is, you know, the tech colleges are still doing magnificent work. So are our universities. And, you know, it's not as though some would say they've closed down. That's not the case. They are doing more with less, as everyone throughout the state in the private sector is, and government's becoming a bit more, you know, leaner, and that's what people want. But the fact is, you know, we have the infrastructure in place. It's how we use that infrastructure to move forward, and I actually really have some positive outlook for the governor's Wisconsin working plan. A couple of things. I mean, if you look at one of the initiatives in there is called Wisconsin Wins.
Mm-hmm.
That is an initiative that Representative Honadel, a colleague of mine, has been forwarding, and it allows Wisconsinites to basically receive unemployment to take part-time training jobs and with employers, and that potentially could lead to full-time employment. It also allows current job seekers to receive training and demonstrate their skills for potential employers. It's been done very successfully in Georgia and a couple of other states. I think this is a win for Wisconsin. It makes sense. It's thinking outside the box, but I think it makes sense as well. You've also got, you know, if you look at the Department of Workforce Development, combining forces with the Department of Veterans Affairs, we're not only going to have more job fairs, but you're going to have more staff. So there is an investment there. You're going to have more outreach as a result. And for veterans specifically, and this is near and dear to my heart because I am a veteran, you have job fairs for veterans, which is incredibly important. We're going to expand upon the current job fairs. We're going to launch online job fairs, which is important, especially in this day and age. There's going to be job placement assistance. There's also, and again, employer outreach and employer education seminars. So this is a plan that incorporates not only matching people up with available jobs, but also matching departments and forcing them to work together, and, of course, having shorter degree programs for areas that have high demand for workers.
Mm-hmm.
It also expands dual enrollment and credit opportunities. That's going to allow high school students to earn college credits and training credits while still in school. So it's a result of, you know, dozens of listening sessions across the state, incorporating ideas that are not Republican, not Democrat. It's how do you utilize existing resources to make this work for the people that are employed and the people that are coming out of high school that really want jobs and need to be trained. I think it is a good plan. Is it perfect? No, but it is a very good step incorporating some ideas that have been proven in other states.
With that, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Teresa in Colfax. And Teresa, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I'm calling about victim witness services.
Okay.
And first, I want to start by thanking Senator Vinehout and Representative Souter for their outstanding performances in the political arena in this last difficult year. I think they're both great people. And the reason I'm calling is because I happen to be a victim witness coordinator, and I'm facing the chance that staffing in my program could be cut because of a lapse fund that has been ordered suggested, and it's going now to the Joint Finance Committee. And in regard to losing funds for victim witness programs of over $450,000 from one of our revenue sources and over $66,000 from another revenue source, which is the general purpose revenue from the state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I think that in Wisconsin, we were the first state in 1980 to pass a Victim's Bill of Rights. In 1993, we passed the Victim's Rights Amendment. 84% of the people of the state of Wisconsin said that victims should have rights. And now we are taking a mandated service. We are giving it back to the county and saying, dropping the percentage of reimbursement for the program from the state and basically saying to the county, well, now you have the choice. You either pay for the services or the services get dropped. And so I just would like to hear the opinion of both of the guests in regard to this cut. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Do you live in Clark County or Eau Claire?
She's in Colfax, so that's Dunn County, I believe, right?
Dunn?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty new to the area, but I'm pretty sure. I believe she's hung up already. But all right, Senator Vinehout, you first.
Well, what she's referring to is kind of an arcane idea of state government. It's called a lapse, and it basically means that if you are going to take a cut out of a program, in the next budget, it's going to return to the level it was before. And there was a large amount of money that was unspecified in the last budget, meaning it was never clear what program was going to be cut. It's actually something that's been done by both governors. But in this budget particularly, we've seen a lot of the departments now are being asked to come up with ways to make this cut real, to sort of say, what pot is it going to come out of?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems as if some of this money is going to Dunn County that they thought they were going to have, they're not going to have anymore, and it may be that Dunn County then made a decision to not fund victim witness services like they have. I think this is a question of priorities. It's a question of where do we want to spend our money, and we just heard from Representative Souter that government is going to become leaner because it's what people want, but I want to remind people that we're spending $2 billion more in this budget. Plus, he talked about federal money. We actually have more dollars coming in from the federal government than we had before. So it's not that we're spending less. We are spending more. It's a question of what we're spending in it. Are we going to spend it on victim witness services, or are we going to spend it on tax credits for really, really rich people?
Representative Souter, a response to or any thoughts on the victim witness?
Well, first of all, I'm trying to figure out the math. I respect the senator greatly, but I don't know where she's coming up with those numbers because I
it's posted on my website if you want to take a look
I'll look at it, but I don't know where you're getting a. We didn't have $500 million in stimulus money that came from the Obama administration to play with.
Right, but we're also spending more than a billion in Medicaid, and that's a 60% match from the federal government.
And we also
60% is a lot of federal dollars coming in that weren't coming in last year.
Representative, go ahead.
Let me answer the caller's question the best I can. Look, there are lapses, yes, and that's nothing new. Every administration goes through some form of lapses. And this is an issue which I think is on the radar screen for a number of our members as well. So you're right. It is going to the Joint Finance Committee. We'll see what they do. There's going to be some changes to these lapses. This is not the final product. It is not I think this is an opportunity for people to talk, not only tonight, but talk to their representatives about, you know, what they'd like to see or not see. And we've had a number of people call with regard to, for instance, sexual assault funding. That's going to change. And that is democracy in action. Yes, we're doing more with less. But that doesn't mean we've been, you know, willy-nilly cutting. We've been cutting responsibly and still preserving those programs that make sense. Many people believe this program makes sense, and we'll see what happens in the Joint Finance Committee.
Let's go back to the phones quickly with Steve in Danbury. He's been on the line for a while. Thanks so much, Steve, for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me on. I hadn't heard Senator Vinehout before, but I'm sure enjoying her. I appreciate her strong, cogent defense of the need for hearings on the mining bill in the North. That was definitely necessary. And I also appreciate hearing her speak about some of the other missteps of the Republican-controlled legislature and administration in our state. And boy, I just think she's a great voice for the Democrats. And if there would happen to be an election for governor in the future, I would hope she would consider being a candidate.
There you go, Senator Vinehout.
Well, thanks for the vote of confidence. I appreciate that.
All right. Anything else there, Steve?
No, but thanks for having me on.
Hey, our pleasure. And the number is 800-228-5615 for any other callers that want to jump in. Time is getting short, but speaking of mining, I want to ask you, sand mining, Senator Vinehout, sand mining is such a big deal in Chippewa County, Barron County, Dunn County, Buffalo County.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. It's such a huge deal. I know you've got some legislation that's about to come out on this. What is it and why?
I have had a number of people call me and say, Kathleen, there's a sand mine going in across the street from me or across the road or in the neighborhood, and I didn't know anything about it. And I think that we need to have public disclosure on what's happening so that people have a right to know what's happening in their neighborhood, and they have a right to speak up. And we're looking at an explosion in the number of sand mines. There's all kinds of jobs being created, but we also have to make sure that the sand mines are good neighbors. There is a way to have a sand mine that is a good neighbor. I think there are a great example down in Taylor in Jackson County. Badger Mining has been around for a long, long time. But right now, people are saying, I want to know. I want to know that it's going to happen in my neighborhood. And so what my bills do is require public disclosure, a 30-day notification that in the regional newspaper and in the local newspaper that there's going to be a public hearing about a sand mine going in. And everybody that lives within a mile is required to get a notice in the mail by first-class mail in the same time period, in a 30-day notice so that they know that this mine is being proposed for their area and they have an opportunity to come to the hearing. They have an opportunity to comment on it, to talk about the issues, and there are a number of issues related to sand mines.
There are, and it's kept me busy reporting on it this summer. We're going to take our final break here on the West Side Political Roundup 2012 version with State Senator Kathleen Vinehout and State Representative Scott Suter. We'll be right back, and we do have a couple calls. We'll try to get them on, but the time is coming up short. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side Political Roundup. We're talking politics, legislation, everything in between with Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma and Republican State Assemblyman Scott Suter of Abbotsford. Pretty much, we've got two calls on the line. You can give a shout-out to 800-228-5615. We can try to get your comment or question on the air, but you might have a better chance of putting it on the West Side Facebook page, because we've only got so much time left. I want to get to health exchanges really quickly here. There was an announcement that the governor recently was going to stop work on Wisconsin creating its own health exchange. I know, Senator Vinehout, you are not too happy about that. You wrote a letter. Why not? It looks like this whole health care reform thing could go down the tubes, either if there's a change in the presidency or if the Supreme Court has a whack at it and gets rid of it. Why bother creating an exchange?
Rich, I just don't think that's going to happen. If we look at what's driving problems in businesses right now, one of the big problems business faces are healthcare costs that are increasing by double digits every year. It's very, very difficult for a small business to survive and to bring health insurance, affordable health insurance, to their employees. Whether Republicans are in charge or Democrats are in charge, it doesn't matter. We have to deal with the problem. Healthcare is eating up more and more of our GDP. I think that health exchanges are a great idea for Wisconsin, regardless of whether or not the federal government goes forward. It's an opportunity to bring together small businesses in the same pool, make that pool as big as possible, lower the risk, and bring down the cost. We have to do that for small businesses.
And you've introduced...
I have introduced a bill to do that. I spent a lot of time working on the bill. It's actually the second session that I've introduced it. It's consistent with the federal law, but it's also a standalone bill. It could go forward without any federal legislation at all. That said, the administration, the Walker administration, has around $38 million from the federal government to start up this idea. So it isn't even necessary that the state invest its own money in getting this started. Once it gets started, it is self-funding. It's an operation that has been done in other states from as diverse as Massachusetts to Utah. It's an idea that whose time has come to help small businesses and people who buy insurance on their own.
All right. Representative Souter, is everything all right there at the Capitol?
Yeah, it's just a standard greeting that
okay.
The Capitol Police says, you know, it's time for the
time
building to
get
closed.
Out. So. All right. What are your thoughts on creating a health exchange, regardless of what happens on the federal level with the health care reform?
Well, honestly, and with all due respect to the Senator, I think it's a horrible idea. It's a horrible idea to put any facet of our health care under the charge, much like Obamacare has tried to do and is doing, of either the federal government or the state government. State government does some good things. The HRSP program does it's a fine, wonderful program. I'm a big supporter.
I know it's shocking, Scott, but my bill is modeled after the HRSP program.
And, Senator, you might like it. And, Senator, I understand that, but it goes much, much further. And health exchanges are at the core of Obamacare. It really is putting government in charge of your health care. And people can talk all day long about how it's going to save costs. Well, look at Obamacare. There is no way in every private survey, in every private acknowledgement of what Obamacare is, when they've taken a look at it and started picking it apart, it's going to cost taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. That's to say it's a savings for America, and no one believes that. No one that I've talked to believes that. I don't think anybody in the country believes that anymore.
I'll send you a study, Scott.
That will not happen. I predict the same thing would happen to health care exchanges for Wisconsin. I think it's a horrible idea to put government in charge of health care. I think it would ruin our not only our economy, but it would ruin small rural hospitals and would put chaos into our health care entirely.
Representative Souter, do you get insurance through the state?
We do, and we have
well,
good
you know
insurance.
What you get. That insurance is so good that we've been able to hold down costs about 7% compared to the rest of the market. That's exactly what I'm talking about giving to our local small businesses and people who buy insurance on their own.
Senator,
farmers.
You're talking about putting
That's
government in charge of everyone's health care. You're going
to have waiting lines.
You're going to have doctor shortages.
That's
you're going to have exactly
fiction.
What's happening in Canada.
No.
And you're going to have huge costs to state government. So we'll have the debate in public, but most people are deathly afraid of putting government in charge of health care.
Okay,
they really are.
I'm going to break it up.
Real.
I'm breaking it up.
We actually
Representative
get a lot,
Souter is against it. Senator Kathleen Vinehout is for it. Last call on the air tonight, probably last question. Going to Hudson. Joanne, what's on your mind?
I have just one comment from Mr. Souter. You know, the Republicans can talk all they want about how they didn't raise taxes, but they did raise taxes. They just call them by another name. And I'm an employee who had to pay into their health insurance and a pension plan for the state. That's a tax on my paycheck. I don't care what you call it. You can call it anything you want, but it's a tax. It's a deduction out of my paycheck that I don't not have that money to spend now in my community. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Souter.
Well, yes, we have asked all public employees to contribute a portion of to their pensions and to their health care premiums, including legislators. But it's not a tax on everyone in the state. And, yes, it is a portion that we have to pay, but most everyone in the private sector is already doing this. So we're just kind of matching what has already been happening in the private sector. Most people you talk with that are in the private sector, they're paying that much, if not more. And I don't think it's unreasonable to ask public employees to contribute to a portion of what is a great pension and what is fantastic health care.
Senator Vinehout?
I've got a document that I'd love to send, Scott, that came from the Fiscal Bureau that says, with the Republican budget, it says tax increases, and then it gives you the list. What we've done is actually increase taxes on the people who can afford it the least. And I'm not talking we. I'm talking you, the Republicans. Homestead exemptions for people living in their homes who have been trying to pay their keep their property taxes low. That's been changed. The earned income tax credit, which helps poorer people. That's been changed. These are all tax increases on the people who can afford it the least.
I respectfully disagree. We didn't do $5 billion in tax increases like you folks did, Senator.
I'll tell you what, you guys are sure good for conversation. I appreciate it. That's our time. I'd like to thank both my guests, Assemblyman Scott Suter and Senator Kathleen Vinehout. You guys are great.
Thanks for having us.
I'd also like to thank Team Westside for that's including Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, Henry Lipple for producing the program, and Ellen Zemaripa, Dean Collenbeck, and Carly Hansen. We'll be back next week with the West Side Outside, with the Outdoor Guys, and Duke Welter, fresh from his stint on the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. That's going to be another great conversation. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.